email me at david.kelmer61@gmail.com and I can ship you a CD that I have, CD copies that I have.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
You have been listening to David Kelmer speaking about his music and his brand new album, Love is a Way of Living. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Pop Montreal International Music Festival is back from September 28th to October 2nd, 2022. 5 days of music and over 200 artists, including teen punk viral sensations, the Linda Lindas, Canada's first drag race winner Priyanka, 70s British funk group Simone, Grammy-nominated and Juno Award winner Alison Russell, iconic dancehall queen Sister Nancy, post-rock legends Tortoise, and many more. The festival also features film screenings, visual art, symposium discussions, and as always, many surprises. Get your tickets and passes now at popmontreal.com. A CKUT co-presentation.
Cinema Politica Concordia is thrilled to invite you to the long-awaited launch of our fall 2022 season. Join us on October 3rd for a special screening of the award-winning film, The Territory, a collaborative and deeply committed film about Indigenous land defenders protecting their traditional territory against encroaching deforestation brought by farmers and illegal settlers. Through dramatic landscapes and Indigenous-filmed witness footage, The Territory highlights the global nature of Indigenous struggle for land and climate justice. On October 3rd, 7 p.m., room H110, Concordia's Hall Building, 1455 de Maisonneuve West. Venue is wheelchair accessible, donations kindly encouraged. CinemaPolitica.org or find us on social media. This is a CKUT Radio co-presentation.
This is Democracy Now!
They killed Mahsa Amini because of a piece of hair coming out from her hijab. The youth is asking for freedom. They are asking for rights for all the people because everyone has the right to have dignity and freedom. The youth, the 15, 16-year-old are asking for rights and freedom, but they kill us. They do not have a conscience, no humanity. They are killing immediately.
Protests are continuing in Iran and around the world demanding justice for Mahsa Amini, the 22-year-old Kurdish-Iranian woman who died in the custody of Iran's so-called morality police. Human rights groups say 76 people have now been killed as Iran cracks down on the women-led protests. We'll get the latest. Plus, we look at a fight for affordable housing in Philadelphia.
The reason that we're fighting for these university cities' low-income affordable housing units is because they're like one of few low-income housing units left in West Philadelphia. And we see that developers are coming through our neighborhoods and gentrifying our areas at an all-time high. And it's not just happening here, it's happening all across the United States.
We'll speak to two residents facing eviction in Philadelphia, plus Bishop William Barber of the Four People's Campaign, which is organizing to stop the evictions. And we go to Baltimore, where a property management company partly owned by Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, has agreed to pay more than $3 million to the state of Maryland for deceiving and cheating tens of thousands of low-income tenants while subjecting them to miserable living conditions. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Russian President Vladimir Putin's addressing Parliament, or the Duma, today, where he's expected to announce the results of referendums held in four Russian-occupied regions of Ukraine. The U.S. and its allies have condemned the votes as a violation of international law and a pretext for Russia to unlawfully annex territory seized since its invasion in February. Earlier today, the former Russian president, Dmitry Medvedev, Kiev. Repeated Putin's warning Russia's prepared to use nuclear weapons if it's provoked by Ukraine or its allies, saying his threat is, quote, certainly not a bluff. Meanwhile, the operator of the Nord Stream pipelines, which carry Russian gas to terminals in Europe, says it detected damage simultaneously at three underwater pipes in the Baltic Sea. It's not yet known what caused the damage, but Denmark's prime minister said she believes it's the result of sabotage. In Russia, a Kremlin spokesperson said Monday no decisions have been taken on whether to close Russia's borders after thousands of military-age men lined up for hours to cross into neighboring countries in an effort to avoid conscription. The mass exodus comes after President Putin ordered the mobilization of 300,000 additional Russian troops to Ukraine. This is a 36-year-old man from Moscow who spoke to reporters just after crossing into Georgia Monday.
Of course, this has scared many people. No one wants to go off to die. Probably people chose this way of protesting, to leave the country. You could say practically to nowhere. People are crossing on foot, with one bag, leaving their whole life behind. You can say all their possessions, absolutely everything, just to live peacefully.
In Cuba, Hurricane Ian made landfall early this morning as a major Category 3 storm, bringing sustained winds of 125 miles per hour to western parts of the island. There were early reports of moderate flooding in coastal areas where Cuban officials evacuated some 50,000 people ahead of the storm's arrival. Ian's expected to strengthen into a powerful Category 4 hurricane capable of catastrophic damage as it tracks toward the Florida Keys. The latest forecast models show Ian tracking toward Florida's west coast, our northwestern panhandle, with a possible direct hit on Tampa Bay, a densely populated low-lying region that's highly vulnerable to storm surge. On Tuesday, officials in Hillsborough County, which covers portions of Tampa, ordered a mandatory evacuation of 300,000 people. County Administrator Bonnie Wise said people should seek shelter with friends or family well away from Florida's Gulf Coast.
We did not make this decision easily, but this storm poses a serious threat, and we must do everything we can to protect our residents. And I can't stress this enough. Evacuation shelters are a last resort. They are not comfortable places. They could be crowded, and they could be noisy. And you could be in a shelter for days.
In Puerto Rico, an estimated 750,000 homes and businesses remain without electricity nearly 10 days after Hurricane Fiona devastated the island's fragile electrical grid. Hundreds of thousands of people continue to face shortages of clean water, fuel, medicine, and other necessities.
We've spent a week without water or power. The authorities haven't done anything for us. It's very bad here. It's rough. Those who come by give us a little water and leave. We are in rough shape. We lost everything. We are in a bad situation.
On Monday, Puerto Rico's governor, Pedro Pierluisi, called on President Biden to waive shipping restrictions under the Jones Act, a century-old law requiring only U.S. flagships carry goods between two points in the U.S. This comes as a ship carrying diesel for the BP oil company remains idling off the coast of Puerto Rico. Meanwhile, Hurricane Ian has delayed NASA's plans to test launch its massive new moon rocket, the Space Launch System. This morning, officials began rolling the 320-foot-tall rocket back to its hangar at Cape Canaveral ahead of the storm's arrival. In more space news, NASA has successfully crashed a robotic spacecraft into an asteroid in a first-of-its-kind test of technology that could one day perhaps prevent a comet or asteroid from hitting the Earth. Mission engineers at the Applied Physics Laboratory erupted in cheers Monday as the Double Asteroid Redirection Test Spacecraft, or DART, live-streamed its final moments plunging toward the asteroid Dimorphos at 14,000 miles per hour.
Oh, wow.
Awaiting visual confirmation.
For humanity in the name of planetary defense.
Astronomers will observe Dimorphos and the much larger asteroided orbits to measure how DART altered their path around the sun. Impacts from comets and asteroids have been described as the only preventable natural disasters, though the odds of a catastrophic impact in any given year are remote. This comes amidst warnings from NASA over the ongoing threat of unnatural disasters. Peter Kalmus, a climate scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, tweeted, "It's great that NASA is testing the ability to deflect an asteroid or comet if necessary. But the actual clear and present danger to humanity is, of course, Earth breakdown from burning fossil fuels. Hashtag don't look up," unquote. In Mississippi, about 1,000 homes and businesses are once again under boil water orders after construction crews accidentally severed a water line on Monday, leading to a drop in pressure. It's the latest of about 300 boil water notices issued in Jackson over the past 2 years, including a citywide advisory lasting 40 days that began in August when torrential rains flooded Jackson's main water treatment plant. On Monday, pastor and co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, Dr. William Barber, led a rally outside the governor's mansion in Jackson, demanding elected officials reverse decades of disinvestment that's left the water unfit to drink in Mississippi's capital city, where 80% of residents are African American.
People are willing to use every voice of love and justice and movement building, and I believe some of y'all are ready even for nonviolent direct action because you're tired of drinking poison. You're tired of your members being washing their babies in poison. And there comes a time you must show people how tired you are.
Back in Russia, President Vladimir Putin signed a decree Monday granting Russian citizenship to Edward Snowden, the former NSA contractor who in 2013 leaked a trove of secret documents about how the United States built a massive surveillance apparatus to spy on Americans and people across the globe. After sharing the documents with American reporters in Hong Kong, Snowden was charged in the U.S. for violating the Espionage Act and other laws. As he fled an attempt to reach political exile in Latin America, Snowden became stranded at Moscow's international airport after the U.S. revoked his passport. He's lived in political exile in Russia ever since. In 2019, Snowden offered to return to the United States if he could be guaranteed a fair trial. In Japan, hundreds of dignitaries and more than 50 current and former world leaders gathered in Tokyo earlier today for the state funeral of former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, 3 months after he was shot dead by an assassin wielding a homemade gun. Members of Japan's self-defense forces fired cannons in a 19-gun salute as Abe's widow, Aki Abe, carried the late leader's ashes to a funeral ceremony. Among those attending were Vice President Kamala Harris and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Meanwhile, thousands of protesters marched through Tokyo streets chanting, "No state funeral." Protesters took aim at Abe's push to revise Japan's pacifist constitution, his ultra-nationalist views, and his refusal to apologize for war crimes committed by Japanese soldiers during World War II. And Cubans have voted overwhelmingly to legalize marriage equality. In a nationwide referendum held Sunday, more than two-thirds of Cuban voters backed a family code that allows LGBTQ people to marry or form civil unions and to adopt children. It also promotes the equal distribution of domestic responsibilities between men and women and takes steps to address domestic and gender-based violence. On Monday, Cuban President Miguel Díaz-Canel tweeted, "Starting today, we will be a better nation." He added the hashtag, "Love is now the law." And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show in Iran, where dozens of people have been killed in a series of escalating women-led protests demanding justice for a 22-year-old Kurdish-Iranian woman named Mahsa Amini, who died in the custody of Iran's so-called morality police. Amini was detained on September 13th for allegedly leaving some of her hair visible in violation of an Iranian law requiring women to cover their head. Witnesses said Amini was severely beaten in a police van. She died after falling into a coma. Her death has sparked the largest protests Iran has seen since at least 2019. The Norway-based group Iran Human Rights estimates 76 people have been killed over the past 2 weeks. At least 1,200 have been arrested. According to the Committee to Protect Journalists, at least 20 journalists have been arrested covering the protests. Communication remains limited to parts of Iran due to internet and social media shutdowns. Meanwhile, Iran's Revolutionary Guard attacked areas in northern Iraq Monday populated by Iranian Kurdish separatists. To talk more about the protests, we're joined in Chicago by Hoda Khatibi. She's an Iranian-American writer, community organizer living in Chicago in the Bay Area. Her new op-ed in the Los Angeles Times is headlined, "Iranian Women Are Rising Up to Demand Freedom. Are We Listening?" Welcome, Hoda, to Democracy Now! Describe
Thank you
the
so much
extent.
For having me.
Can you describe the extent of these women-led protests and how radical it is that it is women and particularly young women who are not only the spark for these protests, but also the ones in the streets?
Absolutely, absolutely. What we're seeing in Iran right now is really exciting and beautiful. It's terrifying, but I think that's just the nature of people movements as we see around the world. I do want to say that these movements right now are absolutely led by women, but as have all of the previous movements in Iran. Women have always sort of played a center role within movement spaces in Iran, both before and after the revolution. And so what we're seeing now is actually the natural culmination, not only of women continuously taking up leadership within systems change in Iran, but also decades of state repression against women, and particularly focused on women's bodies and public spaces. But what is especially unique about this moment right now is that not only are young women, and we're seeing this for the first time, their bravery is really, really energizing and exciting and inspiring, really on the front lines, just being faced with all types of different government repression, from internet censorship to live ammunition to plastic bullets. And also, these sets of protests have a bit of a more intersectional approach to them. The central demand that women are chanting is for women, life, freedom, which originally is a Kurdish slogan, actually, that has now been translated into Farsi and popularized across the country. And we see in the streets, workers are coming out alongside students, Kurdish women, non-Kurdish women. And we see a lot of sort of a greater amount of Iranians from across class background coming together to demand both justice for Mahsa Amini, the abolition of the Geshe Irshad, or the so-called morality police, and all of the systems that uphold it, and the state as well.
Welcome back to CKUT. It's time for a little weather. Wednesday will be foggy with a chance of rain and a high of 16 degrees Celsius. Thursday will be partly sunny with a high of 13 degrees Celsius. Friday will be sunny throughout the day with a high of 16 degrees Celsius. Saturday will also be sunny throughout the day with a high of 18 degrees Celsius. Sunday will be sunny with a high of 13 degrees Celsius. Monday will be sunny with a high of 15 degrees Celsius. And finally, Tuesday will be partly cloudy in the morning, but sunny in the afternoon with a high of 15 degrees Celsius.
Oh, try to listen to my needs. Sort of a materialist, I'm checking off my list. Listen here. I got wants and fears. Want it all or not a thing. For me, there's no in between. Wow, inconsistent, smart, I'm stupid. But tonight I'm on a big gay moon shit. Trust me, I'm the wisest of the prairie. Watch from the side if you think it's too scary. I'm informed like the elephant. You can check my record, yeah. He's innocent. Clean right through, breakthrough, homebrew, kombucha. Wish I could look into the future. I'm the wise tree, juicy and feisty. Bonsai, I'm small but I'm spicy. Got recipes not too good with the curry. Munching on some shit, have my sight blurry. I'm my own chef. When I cook, whip it up from the top like a book. Sharp teeth might look nice, I'm edgy. Clean my plate as long as it's veggie. Yeah. Guess I wouldn't be the first. Yeah, I'm impatient. Take it too far, always ending up in the dark. Things are changing over time. Breaking boundaries. To me, there's no compromise. Can tie me up, I'm in my prime. Put restraints or put me down. I'm restless, wild, I'm ruthless. Got the horse on the torso, beat your chest. Check me out the window. Move across the board, cause chaos like Fargo. I see right through, see what's next. I'm clairvoyant. Oh yeah, he seems smart. Faire semblant, it's a facade. I read your mind just like my mom. Chew and swallow, these are razor blades. Check my fangs, razor sharp. See what's under this charade. Tried but can't escape my charm. Child of the circus. One thing, be playful, worth it. Ambivalent, square or circle shape don't matter, I find purpose. Guess I wouldn't be the first. Yeah, I'm impatient. Take it too far, always ending up in the dark. To work on self-control.
One time for my dudes in the black suit. time for my independent woman getting dope. Time for my independent woman getting dope.
Although humans are undoubtedly the dominant species on the planet, Angela Gleason wonders, are we genuinely sitting pretty at the top of the food chain? Find out on this week's episode of In the Shower with Taz and Marcus.
In the shower with Taz and Marcus. In the shower with Taz and Marcus. In the shower with Taz and Marcus. In the shower with Taz and Marcus. In the shower with Taz and Marcus. In the shower with Taz and Marcus. In the shower with Taz and Marcus. In the shower with Taz and Marcus.
Hello, lovely listeners, and welcome to In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, a bite-sized, informative podcast that's aimed to be listened to while you're in the shower, but really, you can listen to it just about anywhere at all.
Have you ever wondered who drives better, men or women?
Or why we say cheese in photographs?
Or who put the alphabet in order?
Or why dogs smell each other's bums?
If you've wondered the answer to any of these questions, well, you're in luck. We've answered them and a whole host of other questions on over 80 episodes of In the Shower with Taz and Marcus.
And we're about to answer one more.
So step into the shower with us as we answer... Are humans actually at the top of the food chain?
In the shower with Taz and Marcus. 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 In the shower with Taz and Marcus.
Let me begin this episode by just kind of saying that now I'm a little bit more scared to just go outside for fear of getting killed by a superior predator, okay?
Like, you know what, Marcus?
What?
Researching In the Shower with Taz and Marcus episodes, I feel like has given you so many phobias and irrational fears.
No, they're all rational.
So
there's
so,
nothing irrational
so what,
about this.
What kind of predators do we have in Balia Ocklea, Dublin
in
City?
Dublin, we've loads of predators. Have you seen the size of the seagulls? Honestly, they're
like flying rats.
No, rats are small compared to the seagulls. Like, I saw a seagull legitimately steal someone's phone the other day. It was absolutely
what?
Meant they're huge.
I remember one time
it had a knife. It was like, give your phone back!
One time, Marks and I were sitting in Stephen's Green and we were kind of sitting behind a bush and we saw this man eating a sandwich for his lunch and there was a seagull came up to him and he didn't see us and he thought that nobody was seeing him. So as the seagull started to walk up to him, obviously eyeing his sandwich, the guy stood up and...
He started like throwing punches
at the
seagull.
He armed himself ready and like started throwing air punches at the seagull.
But you know what? Like, it's redundant. It's futile. Like, you're not going to win in a fight against a seagull. But then, like, you might come across a gang of Jack Russell Terriers.
What a terrible, terrible thought.
Imagine. Or what about squirrels? Like, they're all furry little death machines.
What are?
Squirrels. Like, imagine. Oh. Imagine getting killed by squirrels.
I mean, there are a lot of bad ways to go, but death by squirrel has to be up there.
Do you know what? Like,
going into this episode, and I will say that when this question was asked, I firmly thought that humans sat on top of the food chain, right?
Right.
And now, I'm not as sure of that fact.
Really? Because actually, interesting enough, when we got sent in this question, it's kind of one of those questions where my first thought was, obviously, yes. But then when you think about it more and more, you're like, hmm.
I think it's the human ego. We like to think we're at the top of the rock, but... Nah.
Nah, nah, nah.
Nah, bruh.
Okay, let's start at the beginning of this. What exactly, I suppose, is the food chain?
So the textbook definition of a food chain is a series of organisms, each dependent on the next as a source of food. It can be broken down into producers, consumers, and decomposers.
So what exactly does that mean?
So simply put, producers are level one, right? So something like algae, grasses, plants... anything that doesn't need to eat something to grow. So generally stuff that relies on photosynthesis to create. So that's level one, right?
Okay.
Easy, right? Then they're the producers. The next level up are consumers. So there's a couple of different levels of consumers. Primary consumers eat the plants. They're right. Herbivores. So there's typically nothing below them on the food chain animal-wise.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
So secondary consumers eat primary consumers.
It's like secondary school students eating primary school students.
Yeah, I don't know what they did in Mullingar. That's a bit full on.
So, say a rabbit could be a primary consumer, then a fox could eat the rabbit, primary and secondary.
Exactly. Then anything that eats the fox is called a tertiary consumer, right? So, say, like... a tertiary consumer is a carnivore that eats other carnivores. So, like, what could eat a fox? Like, an eagle... or something like that could swoop down and eat a fox. I saw a video of an eagle eating a fox the other day.
An eagle eating a fox?
Yeah, it was crazy. And like, it dropped it midair and did like a loop the loop to catch it again in the air.
Eagles are terrifying.
Oh, they're so cool. Like, if, do you know what? If you're going to get killed by something and you had to choose between a seagull and an eagle.
I'd choose a seagull.
Why?
Because an eagle would kill me. I have a chance against a seagull.
Nah, you wouldn't.
Anyway, come here. So tertiary is the last level.
No, actually. There's one above, which is pretty badass and exclusively reserved for whatever animal is quite literally at the top of the food chain, right?
So the humans, no?
No. This is called the apex predator. The apex predator themselves, they have no natural predators and can kind of do whatever the hell they want.
So what do the decomposers do...
Okay, yeah, before we kind of go more into the apex predators, the decomposers are generally fungi or bacteria that break down plant and animal waste so that the whole cycle can repeat itself once again, right? So, you know, producers, so grass, whatever, they grow, get eaten by primary consumers. Primary consumers get eaten by secondary consumers, then get eaten by tertiary consumers, then maybe get eaten by an apex predator, then that apex predator dies... decomposes
and the circle
and
is
the circle it's the circle of life. Yeah,
haven't sang in an episode in a while.
You're absolutely right, but that's what happens, right? It's amazing, that whole cycle and how it repeats itself. So the levels that we've just gone through, by the way, the producers, the levels of consumers, and then the decomposers, are what are called trophic levels, right?
Okay.
And you can determine an organism's place on the food chain by its score, ranging from plants at one and top predators at 5.5.
So the burning questions, are humans at the top of the food chain? Do we have a solid 5.5 score?
No, we really actually don't sit at the top of the food chain.
Really?
Yeah, so ecologists have debated whether humans are apex predators for generations, right? And a scientist called Sylvain Bonomo and colleagues argued in 2013 that across the global food web, which is basically every food chain in the world, slapped together.
So it's kind of how food chains might differ in, say, the Antarctic or in a jungle somewhere.
Exactly. So, I mean, you look at a river area in Africa and a saltwater crocodile is the apex predator. You look at... Antarctica, and it might be a polar bear. So,
but
I mean,
obviously,
like,
if you switch those,
those two around, like you throw a polar bear into Egypt, and it's not going to go too well. You're going to see that on BuzzFeed pretty quickly, right? So basically, what these scientists did was they took the average human diet, and they went from one of the highest meat consumption and one of the highest vegetable consumption, and they combined that to find the human trophic level.
Okay.
So the analysis gave an average human trophic level of 2.21, right? So that varies
what
between...
What does that mean exactly?
So varying between 2.4, so like this is literally primary consumer, okay, is level 2. That was in Burundi, where it's a 96.7% plant-based diet.
Wow.
On average in the population. And then 2.57 for Iceland, which is 50% animal proteins, so meat and fish, and 50% plants. And then they came up with the HCL of 2.21, which puts us right between the anchovy and the pig on the food chain.
What? An anchovy? Are you joking me?
Yep, we are.
We think that we are the best beings in the world, but we're actually anchovies. That's we should be put into little tins.
That's how. That's where we fall in the food chain.
Marcus, of all the... anchovies.
Anchovies and pigs.
Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's really taken me down a peg or two.
Yeah, a peg or two.
anchovies!
Yeah. So, basically, we're smack bang in the middle of it all, according to Dr. Bunomo. But again, we shouldn't be too offended by this because, like, absolute apex predators are creatures like orca whales and polar bears, to be fair. They can kind of eat and kill what they want when they want in their given environment.
So we have your man, Bonamu, who says that if you take into consideration our consumption, then we are, in fact, little shiny anchovies or pigs. But is there anybody who kind of goes against that or have challenged it at all? Because to the naysayer... It would appear that we are definitely top of the food chain.
Yeah, so basically this was challenged mainly by Roop Noreen, right? And I think what you have to remember is that, as I said earlier, each food chain forms a food web. And when it comes to a food chain, a lot of the time humans can be apex predators, but the singular human... definitely is not.
Okay.
If you go back to the trophic levels that I told you about earlier, you'll remember that the levels are determined by the kind of consumer you are, right?
Yeah.
Humans fall where they do because as a global species, although we farm and eat meat, we're largely herbivores still.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you base your idea of meat consumption on America and Europe, well, then, yeah, we eat a lot of meat. But you go to Asia, you go to China, you go to India, and first of all, there's a lot of these places don't have refrigeration, they don't have farming, so like, you know, they don't have intensive meat production in the same way that we do, so it's still...
It's not just as readily available whenever
exactly. So
you
it's
want
like,
it.
It's a largely vegetarian diet. Like when I was travelling around India, and it's like, you might get a bit of meat occasionally, but largely it was vegetarian.
Right.
Just because it's easier to preserve, it's cheaper, it's easier to grow. So, like, humans as a species, on average, are still very much herbivores. Now, as I said, there is a scientist called Roop Noreen who kind of argued that although you can take people in, you know, the Burundi people or the Icelandic people and kind of use them as an example, there are humans that in their individual ecosystems are definitely apex predators at a typical trophic level, right?
Okay.
So, for example, a Caribbean coral reef, the indigenous people there, or the Benguela system near South Africa. In these systems, humans mainly eat predatory fish and have a fractional trophic level of 4.65 and 4.5 respectively, which by any definition would make these humans apex predators, right?
Okay.
I think the conclusion that we can come to, and this is where the scale gets skewed, by science... like, by the trophic level, by the definition of the food chain, we are not on the top of it. But humans are smarter, we're more evolved, we've mastered cooperation, and that allows us to hunt, to farm, to domesticate animals. Like, wolves are an apex predator, and we domesticated them, and now we have herds of Jack Russells or Chihuahuas, for fuck's sake. Like, that's... like, we through our cunning... have kind of cheated the food chain system.
Right.
So it's not necessarily that we are an apex predator. It's just that we're far more efficient at pretty much everything. But when it comes to the global food chain or the food web, we are definitely not sitting at the top in the apex VIP section with the lions, the saltwater crocodiles, the polar bears, and the killer whales. Because there's no pretending.
And as you said, like, I never really thought of it in the context of a global, of a food web as opposed to a food chain. So us in Dublin right now, of course, we would appear to be the apex predator, top of the food chain. Mm-hmm. But throw me or you into the Amazon rainforest or a desert or onto an ice cap in the North Pole.
Throw you into the savannah and see what happens, you know?
We would be very, very low down.
Humans definitely do have natural predators, but there aren't that many people who are... There aren't that many creatures that are hunting a killer whale to eat.
Yeah.
Like, sharks don't do that.
Yeah.
Killer whales kill sharks for fun.
Yeah.
But, like, nothing is kind of killing those creatures to eat. Like, nothing's looking at a saltwater crocodile that's 4 meters long and going, oh, I could definitely have a go at that. So that's what an apex predator is. That's what's sitting on the top of the food chain. It's not us.
Boo-hoo.
In the show with Tazimarcus, 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 in the show with Tazimarcus.
So there you have it, Angela. I hope that hasn't dethroned you too much from your idea of being on the top of the food chain. I'm kind of happy not being on the top of the food chain.
Me too.
Like, it's a lot of responsibility.
It is.
It is. Like, but imagine also having no natural predators.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Absolutely.
This is Phone Doc.
And this mess stinking.
When we ain't chilling up in the bricks in the chalet, we chilling out here in Montreal.
On CKUT.
Nobody do it better, dog.
90.3 FM.
Gone.
For its 9th edition, Montreal Vegan Festival returns to the Palais de Congrès on Saturday, October 8th and Sunday, October 9th, 2022. The festival for all food lovers will be back in downtown Montreal. For 2 days, foodies from all walks of life are invited to experience the vegan lifestyle and discover vegan cuisine. There will be kiosks, cooking demonstrations, and conferences in both French and English, and everyone is welcome. With us today, we have spokesperson Carolyn Huard, also known as Looney. Hi, Looney, and welcome to
the
show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be involved in the Montreal Vegan Festival.
As you said, my name is Caroline. My last name is Huard, which is loon in English. So this is where my nickname comes from. Looney is for actually like the bird. I used to be a health professional. I worked in the health field for many years and I became a vegan myself 11 years ago. And since I didn't have like many friends that were vegan, I started to share my cooking and recipes on Instagram. And this is where I started to gain a following. And it got so big that 3 years ago, I actually left my day job just to become a full-time content, like culinary content creator. And since then, I have published 2 books. I work in TV, radio, on the web, and I actually create content to help people discover vegan cuisine, vegan food, the vegan lifestyle. I was involved with the first edition of the Montreal Vegan Festival in 2014 as a volunteer. I was like responsible, I think, for welcoming the guests and things like that. And I was volunteer for a few years after that. And this year they asked me to be the spokesperson. So I'm very flattered, very honored. And I'm happy to be able to reach more people with the following that I have grown, to reach more people, to invite them to this event.
What is the purpose of the Montreal Vegan Festival?
There are many misconceptions about the vegan lifestyle and vegan food. And I think it's really important. If you want to change your lifestyle, if you want to become a vegan, for instance, it's very important to understand the why. So why do you want to do it? Like, is it like a temporary, like a fad diet that you want to do? Because veganism is not a diet. But when we look in the media, sometimes it is portrayed as a diet. So it's very important to understand why you want to do that. And also to know what are your options. Like if you want to learn vegan cooking, if you want to buy vegan products at the grocery stores. So the purpose of the festival is really to reach many people, of course, not just vegans. It's not a festival that is only for vegan. It is mainly for people who want to learn more about this. So if you want to learn more about like how to do it day to day and why you want to do it, this is the event for it.
What is the toxic diet culture in Montreal and why should we be careful?
Well, toxic diet culture is a subject that I know really well. I actually did a documentary podcast last year with Radio-Canada on this very subject. It is really not specific to Montreal. It's all over the world, but mostly in the Western world. Toxic diet culture is actually a belief that we have that we are supposed to have, like, there's one body type that is praised, which is a thin body type, and that we are supposed to do whatever is possible, whatever is available to try and shrink our bodies. That goes usually through dieting. But when you look at the science, there is not only one body type that is healthy, and it is much more important to focus on building sustainable, healthy habits instead of focusing on your weight. So the toxic diet culture is something I'm very passionate about, especially as a vegan, because there is a lot of diet talk around veganism, and it shouldn't be like that, because veganism is about it can be about health, it can be very healthy, but it is mostly about questioning the way we relate to animals and the way we relate to the planet as well. So it is a very, when you're vegan, it's really about a compassionate lifestyle. It's not about diet, but unfortunately, they are really meshed in with each other. So I think it's important to learn about that.
Have you ever eaten anything non-vegan? And what is the difference between the vegan and the omnivore eater?
I was an omnivore for like the first 30 years of my life. I was not born in a vegan family. No one was vegan around me. And this is, like I said, why I actually started to build a community online, because I didn't have many people to relate to. So of course, I've eaten meat, I've eaten cheese, yogurt, all that. Being an omnivore basically means that you eat pretty much anything that is either plant-based and animal-based. When you're vegan, of course, you don't use the animal to your benefit. So we don't relate to animals as if they were just something that we can consume. So that means that as a vegan, you don't like wear leather, you don't wear wool, you don't go into a horse carriage for a leisure, you don't do that. But also you don't eat any animal and animal products. So you eat a plant-based diet as a vegan. So I have eaten meat for the first 30 years of my life. And I think it's important to mention that even when I made the choice to become a vegan, I have not been like a 100% perfect vegan, because we do not live in a perfect vegan world. And most of the options around us are animal-based. If you go to a restaurant, if you go to the hotel, for instance. So I have not been a perfect vegan. I'm trying my best. And I would say it's been a few years since I've had an animal product. But in the first years I was a vegan, I could have an egg once in a while and I didn't feel good about it, but it was sometimes the only option because I didn't plan ahead. I can say I don't remember the last time I had an animal product, because there are many more options around us. And I think it's important to understand that you don't have to be perfect from day one. It is something that we can aspire to, have a mostly plant-based diet. It's not going to be easy for most people as long as the systems are based on the use of animal products.
How will the festival be zero waste this year? And who is responsible for that decision?
Well, I think it's important to understand that there are links between the vegan lifestyle and having a sustainable lifestyle. The vegan lifestyle is a sustainable lifestyle for the most part, because animal agriculture is very, very heavy on the planet. So when you switch to a plant-based diet, it is an environmental, that is good for the environment when you become a vegan. It only made sense for the organization of the festival to move towards a zero waste event. That kind of thing is very intentional, just to be aligned with the core values of the festival. So for instance, if you try food, if you're going to be able to try some food at the festival, everything is going to be like compostable, for instance.
Tell us about the dying discount card. How does it work?
You know, after the pandemic, there are a lot of restaurants that, let's say that they were challenged because of everything that was closed. So in order to help the restaurant get discovered, and in order also to help people discover many of the different like vegan options that are available in the restaurants in Montreal, you can actually purchase a card that is going to be effective for 2 weeks around the festival, and you can try restaurants with a discount. So it is a very affordable way to discover restaurants during that week. It's kind of like if the festival was longer than the 2 days, because during those 2 weeks, you're going to be able to enjoy restaurants.
What is Afroveganism?
Oh, that's Afro-veganism. I'm actually, as a white lady, I'm not the best person to answer this question. But from what I, from my understanding of Afro-veganism, it is actually a social justice movement that is at the intersection of, I would say, racial justice and animal justice. What we see is that there are many Black folks who embrace plant-based and vegan lifestyle. And it was done way before the white people made veganism mainstream. Like, we did not invent it. And at the festival, there are going to be two lectures that are going to be super interesting. One is going to be with a chef, local chef, Evie Mendes, who she's going to do a cooking demo of West African cuisine, like vegan cuisine. And there is going to be also Joe J. Thomas. He's the founder of Black Vegans of Toronto. There is a huge Black vegan community in Toronto. And I think that they are trying to build a bigger community like that in Montreal too. So if you want to learn more at the festival, those lectures are going to be super interesting.
Who is vegan growing, homesteading, and farming? And where can we apply it in our own lives and communities?
Well, I think what you're referring to is what we call veganic growing, which is actually the contraction of the words vegan and organic. So it's actually a way of growing vegetables that doesn't use any animal products, because the traditional way that we grow vegetable usually uses animal waste. So if we want an agriculture that is independent from the use of animal, we have to learn how to use like plant-based products. So there's going to be Jimmy Vidal, and he's going to give a lecture about this subject.
What is involved in the fight for rights for farm animals? Who will be the speaker at the festival, and what will she talk about?
Yeah, that is a very interesting subject, because I think it's important if we want, like, if you're a vegan and if you want to help the animal, one thing that you can do, of course, is not eat them and try to live a vegan lifestyle. That's one thing. But we also need changes in policies that are going to protect the animals. You know, it's not just the responsibility of each, every person. There are actually systemic things that need to change, like the policies. And there are policies that were passed, I think, in 2015 about the rights of the animals in Canada, but the farm animals are excluded from that, which doesn't make sense. And we are very like offended when we see someone who is raising puppies and they are in a poor condition. But we don't have a problem when the same thing is happening with pigs, for instance. So there are people who are fighting to change the laws to give more protection to the animals. And Chloé Surprenant, she is a criminal lawyer that specializes in animal rights. She's going to be speaking at the festival on those issues. So I think it's going to be very interesting. It's not easy. It's very uncomfortable to talk about these things. But I think it's important if we want systemic changes to happen.
Who are the guest chefs at the festival, and what will they bring for us to experience?
Oh my God, I don't have the whole list. I know I'm one of them, so I can give that. But there are different chefs, like Evie Mendes, she's going to show like West African cooking. There are going to be two. There's going to be an athlete with Xavier Desharnais and his friend, Nicolas Leduc Savard, who is a nutritionist that specializes in sport. Like, those two are going to show what a vegan athlete can eat. And there are going to be different cooking demos on like dessert, easy weekday cooking, something more complex also. So there are many, and you're going to be able to see like many different types of cuisine. Because I think that when we think about vegan cuisine, we think about something that is kind of like, I would say, like the crunchy lifestyle, like quinoa, sprouts, and things like that. And that can be delicious, but it's really not the only thing that we can eat. We can eat like burgers, pizzas, like food from all over the world. So I think it's going to be great to discover different type of vegan cuisine.
When and where will the festival be taking place, and what will it cost?
Yeah, so it's going to be at the Palais des Congrès de Montréal on Saturday the 8th and Sunday the 9th of October, so 2 days. It is actually the long weekend, so most people don't work on Monday, so it's a good opportunity to take one of those days to come to the festival. And it's going to cost $8 for the entry or $15 for 2-day entry. It's important to know that the festival is a nonprofit organization, and everyone who works there is actually a volunteer. So this money goes to support things like the zero waste aspect of the festival, like to purchase the compostable cutlery. That's a tough word also, to just to support also the fact that it's at the Palais des Congrès and things like that. It's a really, really reasonable cost for an event like that. And when you come, there are going to be the lectures and the kiosk, and you can actually try things, you can taste things. So that's going to be, I think it's going to be very interesting.
If our listeners want more information about the Montreal Vegan Festival, where should they go?
Yeah, so everything can be found on the website. So it's festivalvegandemontreal.com. You can actually just Google Montreal Vegan Festival and you're going to get on the website. This is where you can purchase the tickets and you can have the detailed schedule of the lectures. There's a specific one that you want to see. You can just arrange to come on that day, or ideally come on both days because everything is going to be interesting. As for myself, I'm going to be doing a cooking demo, and I'm going to be meeting people, also signing books. So I think it's going to be really fun.
And at that time, if you happen to call, you can ask if you want to be a volunteer.
You are tuned to CKUT 90.3 in Montreal. It is 9 a.m. This is Terminal 5.
Time to get another dose. Boosting your antibodies reduces the risk of getting or transmitting the virus. And booster doses help reduce the number of hospitalizations and deaths related to COVID-19. For better protection against the virus, book an appointment at quebec.ca/COVID vaccine and follow the recommended vaccination schedule. Vaccination against COVID-19, a good way of extending our protection. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.